Boom, we're on.
We're on. All right, welcome to How to Build a Tent, the casual edition. This show is not about tent building, but it's how to make you successful. Did you know that?
No.
Have you listened to this show before you've come on?
No.
No? Wow, okay. So we're going to make a fan out of our next guest, Nathan Phalangis. Is that what, Russian?
It's Greek.
Oh, I knew that.
Hebrew, Greek, perfect connection.
We are part of the Cross Politic channel, or no, the Fight Laugh Feast channel. We became the Fight Laugh Feast Network. We used to be Cross Politic.
Nathan and I have known each other for a very long time, if you haven't been able to tell that. All the way back in Bible college days, actually.
Yeah, that's where we met.
Yeah. So back to business of podcasting. Go over to the Fight Laugh Feast Network channel, fightlaughfeast.com. Become a member, put in HTBT in the memo field, you'll get an HTBT mug, and you'll get tons of other benefits, and you'll be coming alongside of us as we're proclaiming the Lordship of Jesus in every area of life. It's really weird seeing someone staring at you when you're doing this spiel, but it's okay.
You're usually alone?
Yeah, I'm usually alone.
What about
alone.
That other
all by
guy?
Myself. What other guy?
Oh, the person I met at the party.
Oh, Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been on the show, but he was a phone interview.
Oh.
You are special. You get to meet in person.
All right. Yes.
If you have any questions, comments of like what's going on in the show, you can reach out to me at How to Build a Tent on all the social media sites. You can email me, Matt, at howtobuildatent.com if you're antisocial and not on the social media sites. So Nathan swung by, and I basically suckered him into doing this podcast. I pressured him into it. But he has a lot of great skills and has a very interesting past in his career. One of them is making videos. And I thought that would be a very interesting discussion topic to talk about because we're entering a digital economy like we talk about a lot. And there are a lot more opportunities for people to get into the profession of content producing, like podcasting, or other ways that you can shoot video. So I thought it'd be cool to hear his story because he actually kind of was pretty famous in our circles back in the day.
Yeah. I don't know about that. But I guess back probably in 2009, my friend Mark and I, we started Mark and Nathan Productions, which was a YouTube sketch comedy channel. Just mostly the two of us making a lot of jokes. And for the most part, it was pretty clean jokes too. We kind of geared to a younger audience and didn't try to cuss or anything like that. And so YouTube, I guess, was started probably like 2002 maybe?
Yeah, 2002-03, something like that.
But it wasn't big. It wasn't quite huge as it was today back in those days at all.
It's pre-Google.
And even back in 2009 when we started making YouTube videos, I remember thinking to myself, like, this ship has sailed. I'm like way far behind. I can never really make it. But then you see what happened today. It's like so different than it was in those days.
Yeah.
So Mark and I made these sketch comedy videos. And if anyone wants to make movies online or videos, comedy or whatever, it can be hard to actually be successful in the YouTube market, in the online market. Usually if you're wildly successful, you're making a lot of money. And if you're not... really that's successful, then you're not making much money at all.
Just like podcasting.
Probably like podcasting.
So how did it get started? Like, what got you into making videos? Is it something you've been a hobby or whatever? Because back then, like, stuff wasn't cheap. Like, nowadays, you can buy a GoPro, you can buy, like, stuff for, like, under $1,000 and get all set up.
Yeah, I mean, Mark and I, we were friends growing up in high school. We went to elementary school, junior high school together, and so we always hung out with each other and had a video camera. Mark's dad actually used to make movies.
Oh, I
didn't
know that.
Like, full-on, like, you know, 8mm films. And so he was kind of raised with that. He always had a video camera, so we'd go around the neighborhood, and that's how it initially got started. We would just, like, film each other doing really stupid skits. And then it kind of...
They were stupid.
I mean, if you think what's online now is stupid, back in those days, it was so stupid.
And low resolution.
Yeah. Where editing was like a huge process and difficulty. But then when YouTube came around, we said, hey, let's come out with some real videos. And we started coming out with some comedy videos, and which were, again, not very successful. Eventually, there was a contest, I remember. It was Kia. It was this Kia contest for one of their new cars that they're, Kia Soul, actually, they were issuing out.
You have a lot of soul.
Yes. And they said that, okay, we're going to have this contest to see who the next big YouTuber will be. Who's going to be the next big one? And we're going to push you to the top of popularity. So Mark and I, we follow the rules and we put out this video, this comedy video, to submit it to this contest. And this most stupid part about it was, and this is like, this defines who we were for the next like several years, is that we put all this effort, made this video, but when we submitted it, we were supposed to submit it to the Eastern time. Like, so we were supposed to submit it by 9 p.m., but we submitted it at 12, because that's when they said to do it, at 12. Uh-huh. And we were 3 hours late. And our video never actually made it into the contest. But what happened was is that the individuals who were running the contest saw it, and they said, this was the best video out of all the videos. And it would have won the contest. Uh-huh. You should come down to our headquarters in Santa Monica. And this group was a group called Smosh. I don't know if people have heard of the video duo, comedy sketch, comedy duo called Smosh.
I haven't, so can you explain what it is?
Smosh was the number one YouTuber group for several years, especially in the beginning of YouTube. Like, these were the guys that got all the views. And they came out with this one video, the Pokemon theme song video, and that was one of their biggest videos of all time. And then it got taken down by Pokemon, basically. But that's what launched them. So being on Smosh was kind of a big deal. So Smosh saw our video, even though we technically didn't submit it on time, and they said, why don't you just work for us? We have our own website. We'll have you guys come submit one video a week to our website. And the rule was is that our video had to be on their website for a week before it was allowed to go on YouTube.
Oh, interesting.
And then once a week had passed, we could post it to our own channel on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But essentially all the ad revenue would, like, if anyone wanted to see a Mark and Nathan Productions film, they'd have to come to Smosh first, and they could watch the new videos. And so we just started making videos for them, and that lasted for about 2 years or a year or something, a year and a half or something like that. Was going pretty good.
Yeah, that's great. And then you also had someone reach out to you. I don't know how it happened exactly. I forget. But you actually made a music video for an artist too, right? Yeah. Do you remember that?
That was, yeah, I do remember that. That was kind of just something a little bit separate. We made a stop motion video for an artist named Steffi. And Steffi, again, she was like almost there, almost famous. I feel kind of bad because she was really almost there, but didn't quite make it. But we made a stop motion video for her, and I think that was called Pretty Little Nightmare. I'm sure you can find it online. STFY. And so that was a little bit before probably when we got on board with Smosh. Mm-hmm. So that was even a little bit like a year before we got on board with Smosh. Yeah. But we were doing stuff like that, and it was cool. Actually, we were not too unsuccessful.
Don't be modest. We're successful. Well, we were pulling things off.
We're talking about like 2010 here. And in 2010, should I talk to you or the camera?
Either one.
Okay.
Actually, talk to people listening, probably.
Back in 2010, just feel like Joe Rogan would.
I wish.
Yeah. Anyways, back in 2010, I'll talk to you. Okay. Back in 2010, Matt,
I'm going to have to block that out now.
Are you?
No.
So back in 2010, YouTube was not like what it is today at all. Actually, I distinctly remember in 2010, maybe 2009, you know how on your phone, your smartphone, you can watch YouTube on the app?
Yeah.
They have advertisements. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have them back in those days.
That's right.
The phones were small. The screens were small.
They were skinny. It was like the cool thing to have a skinny Razer phone back then.
So you just go on your laptop. You wouldn't go think about watching movies or videos on your phone.
Yeah, that's right.
We started making these big phones, and then they started implementing advertisements on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And when that started happening...
Oh, sorry, everyone. It's unprofessional of me. I'm just going to blame Nathan next episode when he's gone.
Yeah, mine's going to ring too. But when that started happening... is that when you start seeing YouTube really blow up, and people who are online channels blowing up and people becoming incredibly successful.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we were probably making, even in those days, about $1,000 a month.
That's really good.
Which wasn't much. Obviously, it wasn't enough to sustain us.
Right, but back in the day, it was good, though, for YouTubing, for sure.
It was pretty all right. And we had 25,000 subscribers. So again,
that's really good.
That doesn't sound exciting.
It doesn't mean.
According to today's standards. But back in 2010, 25,000 was kind of good.
Yeah, I mean, you guys really did put out great shows and great content and stuff. It was really great. So I want you to tell me now what it was like working and doing these things with a friend. Was it exciting? Was it frustrating? And remember, I'm going to tag him in this.
Oh, you get him. So Mark and I, that's actually one of the hard parts about business, too, because one person has an idea of how things should be. You have creativity differences like how a sketch should go. Mm-hmm. We would often kind of debate about these things. But that's not really it. Sometimes, too, it was about ultimately why we never were really successful. Probably had to deal with this one area that we're talking about now, in my opinion. I mean, Mark might have some different
but he's not on the show.
To say. He's not,
your opinion is
but
right.
If you want the truth. There came a point when we had been doing this for Smosh for like a year, and we took advantage of the opportunity, but we could have put in some more effort for mm-hmm. sure. It felt like priorities were out of place. Mm. Mark had just started a relationship with this girl.
Women, man, ruin everything. Just kidding.
just started a relationship with Anka's, his now wife. And the distractions, I remember I'd be coming over to the house and we're supposed to film and the script wasn't even written. And it was like, what? Because Mark always wanted to write the script. That was like his pride, like, I'll mm-hmm. write. And then I would contribute a lot to it. But even if I tried to write my own script, he'd be like a little hesitant, like, no, you know. So it was up to him a lot for that part of the business. And then he'd show up at his house and there'd be nothing ready, and it'd be like, what's the script, you know? And he'd be sleeping still, and we're all the film crews there, you know, we're all ready. And I'd be like, what were you doing last night? And it's like, oh, you know, hanging out with Anka. And you could start telling that priorities were mm-hmm. were different. And then in addition, you know, making $1,000 a month isn't that much, especially right. if you're splitting it. So $500 a month,
yeah.
Her family as well, getting really confused that he's a computer programmer. You know, he can be making like $100,000 a year or more, mm-hmm. and he's not working mm-hmm. as a computer programmer right now. He's doing videos, and they were really not into that. You know, they're being negative about it.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, I'd be kind of like, dude, what are we doing? You know, and there was a bit of conflict from that standpoint. It makes me just want to, like, whenever I want to start a business, I feel like I can handle this myself. But it's probably not a good answer either to try to place all that burden on yourself.
Actually, a lot of people that I've spoken to that have gone through the entrepreneurship game many times, they start with big groups of people, like, yeah, let's get everyone involved and everyone can have their say and we'll just do it all together and it'll be a fun time. And then, like, as they get more seasoned and they go through experience, they're like, I'm never doing this with anyone again. Like, it whittles down. Their second business is like three people.
Yeah.
And then the other one's like, oh, just one other person. And then eventually you're like, no, I'm doing this myself.
Yeah.
So I want you now to talk to the camera and give them advice for those who are, you know, maybe do this as a hobby or are looking to get into film or doing these kinds of things. What would you give them as advice? Either things you've learned besides don't go into business with friends. That's what I say anyways. Don't go into business with friends or family. But like from just a video perspective, like is there things that you learned through your experience that you wish someone had told you beforehand?
I think on one hand, you kind of have to chug along a little bit and just kind of keep going. I think that people who have been doing it for like 2 years straight, mm-hmm. if they really still only have like 1,000 subscribers, then there's something wrong with the talent at that point.
Right.
I think like you can't, I do think that it builds upon itself and that it just kind of takes time. I also would say that if you really want to be successful online, then it's important to try to collaborate with other people and to get shout outs from other people. I mean, that's if somehow you could really get someone big up there. And that's what happened with us, right? We had Smosh, which was the number one duo on the internet, kind of take us under their wing. And we shot a film for Smosh. So we were in Smosh's episode, which got like millions of views, right? And then they shot a film with us. And so we had them in our video, and that got a lot of attention, right? And that was really a huge part of being successful. One thing was getting from 0 subscribers to 5,000 subscribers was super hard. Getting from 5,000 to 25,000 was not really that hard. It kind of snowballs and builds on itself when it comes to, in my opinion, online and video making. Unless if you do something to shoot yourself in the foot, like you say something really bad or do something really bad. You know, usually if you kind of chug along, it snowballs a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like you're really, when you're on your own and you're not trying to use other people's momentum like that, getting shout outs, you're like swimming against the current. But when you're getting those shout outs, it's like you're swimming with the current, and it's just so much easier to do that, right?
Yeah, yeah, it is. And we would do all sorts of little things at the time, like try to capitalize on what's current. So Justin Bieber would do something funny in the news, and we'd make like a Justin Bieber video, which looking back was kind of tasteless in some ways, you know.
I don't know, was it? Is it
was kind of like all the videos that we tried to cap, like Charlie Sheen. Do you remember when Charlie Sheen was going crazy?
Yeah, that time, that one time.
We made a Charlie Sheen video. Like we always look back on the Charlie Sheen video with embarrassment, but I, to some degree, capitalizing on those hot trends will help. But at the same time, in the long run, I also kind of look back and like, you know, I don't show those videos to anybody, whoever comes across our videos. No.
Is there a place where people can find these videos? Because I'm sure now they're like curious. They want to see what you're embarrassed about.
They're still online. I love Mark and Nathan. Mark is spelled with a C, M-A-R-C. If you type that into YouTube, I'm sure you'll still find a lot of videos about
how much you love each other.
We had a few, quite a few, probably. And again, this is at a different time. So, but like we'd usually get about 150, 200, sometimes 300,000 views, sometimes only like 50,000 views. But that's kind of where we were.
I think that's amazing even now in today's, I mean, to get that kind of being your independent label kind of a thing.
I wonder what we would, I do wonder if we came back, how many of our original subscribers would still be there? Like, sure, we still have them, but have they moved on? You know, it'd be interesting. But the thing about making videos online is that it doesn't matter what the content is, as long as somebody will simply watch it when it comes to advertisement.
Right.
So I could spend 4 months doing a stop motion video that could get 200,000 views, you know, and it's put a lot of work, or I could take a clip from this podcast right now where we were just talking about something for 30 seconds or like a minute or something like that, put it on YouTube, and then still get the advertisement. So it's really interesting going into making videos online. Like, what style, what is kind of your, what are you going to be all about? Because making sketch comedy, I can tell already, it's gone down. Since when I was doing it, there were a lot of sketch comedy duos, and I'm sure there still are today. But people discovered that that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And at the end of the day, they just need someone to watch it. So you could just vlog and just talk about anything, you know? And if people find you interesting, then they'll watch it. And, you know, it's so much easier than putting together this big old production. So
definitely doesn't have the high standard like it used to with Charlie Sheen videos.
Charlie Sheen videos, the Justin Bieber videos, those were huge quality content out there.
You know what you should do is you should take this clip teasing that you're thinking about getting back into it and put it on your YouTube channel and see how much of a reaction you get.
Yep, you might get some of those.
Like, what if it like blows up though, and like you get, because you know YouTube's so much bigger now, and everyone's like, yes, come back.
It's being on YouTube is a risky move, and there's a lot of drama with it right now with ads and the adpocalypse, they call it, where advertisers don't want to advertise on certain videos like they did back when I was doing it. Like, you could just put your video online back in the day, and that was it. You get the advertisement, and almost the content didn't matter that much. But right now, just politically speaking, everyone's very sensitive, everyone's very careful. So the advertisers are being careful now.
Yeah.
And they're saying, a lot of people are getting demonetized, basically. It's becoming a difficult market to be on YouTube. And they talk about different options, someone needs to create a new YouTube. But at this point, we're kind of stuck with where we are.
Yeah, I'm actually coming out with a business in response to that, which will be cool. Not an own platform. There's 1,000 platforms. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, someone needs to come out with their own YouTube. They don't realize that there's already like 20 or 30 of them out there, just no one knows about, because it's really hard to build another platform.
Yeah.
If you ever think about it, like, how does a platform become valuable? It's when people are on it. So when you start a platform, how do you get people on it? Because it's not valuable.
And then the other struggle is that, where's the blame? Is the blame YouTube, which I think it is to some degree, or is the blame advertisers? Which
the demonetization or the selectiveness of advertisers?
And both? It could be both problems. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard because now advertisers are being very kind of picky. But mm-hmm. they didn't used to be.
Well, we're in a completely different climate than we were back in the day. Like, now you will get like hung on the Twitter feed. If you're associated with the wrong person, you didn't even mean to do it. It's like over for you. But that wasn't like it. It wasn't like that like 10 years ago, right?
No, it wasn't like that at all, and someone's going to find this clip and then they're going to find a clip of you like 20 episodes ago saying this one thing, and then they're going to be like, you associate yourself with that person, and then I'm going to get fired from my job. But that's almost where we are, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like something like that could happen. Like, didn't you know what Matt Williams said on that one day? I'm like, no, I didn't know.
Yeah. It's like even worse. It's like, do you know what he put in his first grade yearbook?
I know. And that's not good for business,
It's not good for society, I think, right?
Yeah, it's what confuses me about it too, I didn't major in business, right? So like, who is it benefiting? I sometimes wonder about this whole YouTube and demonetization, mm-hmm. and like, who is it? It's not benefiting the creators, but it's also not benefiting YouTube because they're not getting money too. So it's the advertisers, I guess, who want to be so careful that they're not advertising on a bad product.
Mm-hmm.
That, it's just kind of weird that, let's just go back to how it was, and everyone can benefit. The creators can benefit.
Yeah.
The
everyone
YouTube can benefit.
It was a win-win-win. And now it's just lose, lose, lose.
It is kind of lose, losey.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and because it's like the platform makes money off people being on there.
Yeah.
But they're like willing, for ideological reasons, for the most part, right? They're willing to take a cut in profits to get their way and to have their voices heard more than others.
I know, and that's what confuses me. And I talk to my more liberal friends, mm-hmm. and I try to ask them these questions because I genuinely want to know if there's a real, because it kind of baffles me. I would think that YouTube would be trying their hardest to keep those videos being advertised for, mm-hmm. unless if it was really bad, you know what I mean?
Right,
unless if it was ridiculously bad. But it seems like the companies would rather kind of virtue signal to some degree, and mm-hmm. to say, kind of be painted in a better light.
Which is funny because it's coming from the left. I guess it could happen from the right, but I guess the right doesn't really have any platform. So
yeah.
I'm sure in some platform, if they had the power from the right, would do something similar. I'm not like saying that the right is virtuous all the time.
Yeah.
But it's just so funny because growing up, we always heard that America was great because of the freedom of ideas and being able to be liberal in the true sense of the word, where if you had an idea, you could share it, and maybe the idea was terrible and it would get destroyed, but your life wouldn't get destroyed, your business wouldn't get destroyed, and those things. And
yeah.
that side is now completely doing the opposite, where it's like, no, you don't even get to speak.
I know, I always feel like when it comes to freedom of speech, it appears as though freedom of speech is only designated to those who are retired, because you don't really have any more freedom because you're just going to get fired from your job. If
right.
you say anything, If you're self-employed, then you won't get fired. So I guess the potentially self-employed...
Well, unless you get deplatformed. That's the power, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Unless you get deplatformed. Mm-hmm. So...
Did you hear about how people were leaving Patreon and they were going to another platform? I forgot the name of it, but it was PayPal-based. Mm-hmm. And then PayPal said, oh, nope, you're out.
Yep.
And just basically ruined that other platform.
It's kind of scary. So one thing, and these are kind of some, you know, I don't have all the facts, but Patreon situation. At one point, Patreon claimed that it was the MasterCard-like company that was the one, you know, kind of tying their hands mm-hmm. up, saying, you know, it's not us, guys. It's actually them. Now, I don't know if that's true. It could have been a big excuse by Patreon for what they were doing. But isn't that scary if it really was, like, the credit card companies that were saying, we won't let you, it's almost like Mark of the Beast-ish, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like scary, like you cannot buy or sell, you cannot,
that's right.
You cannot participate in the exchange of money mm-hmm. because we didn't agree with what you believe. I don't know if it really is true or Patreon's just kind of making that up, but if it is, it's like, that's kind of a scary place to be in that, you know, it's not like we're talking about the black market. We're not like, right. We're not talking about like, you know, we're talking about someone saying a belief about some particular subject, right. Whatever it is. I don't know, feminism mm-hmm. or politics or whatever. And for
religion,
someone,
anything.
For someone to get that would be a scary place to be, is if there's no avenues and the one avenue is, you know, being controlled. That's kind of a weird place to be for the future. It's not a lot of freedom associated with that thought.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Not that traditional American. And I wish that these companies, because I understand too that the First Amendment, you know, mm-hmm. it's, YouTube's a company, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't have to abide by the First Amendment, but right. they should try kind of to at least mimic, in my opinion, the like how the First Amendment would in their practice. I think that they should try to model it after that. Obviously, the First Amendment doesn't necessarily apply to mm-hmm. a private business. Like you can't just you know, say things, but I would hope that they would try to kind of...
Right. I mean, it'd be good for them. It'd be best for business for them. The funny thing is there's a lot of regulations around publications and things like that. Like, if you're a platform that doesn't moderate content, then you can't be sued for... like slander or libel, those kinds of things, because you're like, hey, I'm just the platform. I'm not a publisher.
First the publisher, yeah.
And it's interesting because going to your point, like it would be better for them, not just that they would be making more money because they're not kicking people off, but now they're putting themselves in legal jeopardy to get sued for it.
Yeah.
So if you're a lawyer looking for class action, this might be an avenue for you.
And I've heard that controversy with Facebook recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to look into it more, but... where they're acting a little bit more like a publisher and that they're deciding to edit more conservative thoughts out. But wait, what are you? Are you a platform or are you a publisher? And I don't know what the result of that is because I think it's happening right now.
Yeah, it's ongoing. We'll see how that plays out. All right, so we are out of time. See how easy that was?
Whoa!
Like you were kicking and screaming and I wiped your tears away and just threw you up here. And man, we've done like 30 minutes or
30
something
minutes.
Like that. I don't know. I'm going to cut it down so it's not going to be 30 minutes. Maybe we'll have bonus features on my Patreon account.
Best of luck to everyone wanting to start a YouTube channel or a business online.
All right.
It's a little bit tough, but I still think it can be a very fun career.
So if somebody would want to have more questions or hire you for a maybe business gig, for writing shooting a video for a business they have, a promo video, would you be interested? Do you want people to reach out to you, or do you want to be a hermit and just not give out contact info?
I mean, sure, you could
like
contact
Facebook,
me.
Twitter, any of those things?
I mean, you can contact email. Me at my email.
Okay.
You it's just my first and last name at Gmail, so Nathan.
Well, you're going to have to spell that.
Yeah, Nathan Phalangas, F as in Frank, Phalangas.
All right, and if you don't remember that, you're on the car and you don't want to get in a car accident trying to write that down, you can email me and just let me know you want to get in contact with him and I will pass it along. How to Build a Tent on the social media sites, Matt at howtobuildatent.com if you want to email me. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.